Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the iPRO Clinical Strategies to Improve Patient Outcomes Shared Learning Session conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the conference, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this conference call is being recorded. I would now like to introduce your host for today's conference, Ms. Christine Siegel. You may begin.
Good morning, everyone. I'd like to thank you for joining us this morning for our monthly shared learning session to reduce avoidable acute care hospitalizations. Those of you who registered for today's conference call were forwarded via email a copy of the PowerPoint slide presentation that will be referenced to during today's call. You should have also received two handouts, as well as a program evaluation form. As a reminder, this conference call session is being taped and will be posted to the home health section of the iPRO website next week to make it available for future review. The PowerPoint slides and the program evaluation and handouts form are also posted to the website in the home health quality section under the current events. The home health agency patient who is elderly, typically 75 or 80, frail with multiple diagnoses that are chronic in nature, and who are dually eligible for Medicare and Medicaid, typically require extra care coordination and frequently experience repeated hospitalizations. Their caregivers need more assistance to manage those patients at home. Does this sound like a few of patients that your agency is currently providing services for? Well, this morning you will hear about an innovative program that can develop an informal network of support for those challenging patients. Now it's my pleasure to introduce Laura Radensky, a licensed social worker and associate director of social work for the Community Services Division of Jewish Home Life Care Community Services. She has worked in the long-term home health care program of Jewish Home Life Care Community Services for the past 18 years, first as a social worker and then as a social work supervisor. For the past 2 years, she has been overseeing the elder abuse program in home care, as well as a volunteer program to place volunteers with their home care patients. In addition, she provides consultation and oversight of social work services in the home care programs, adult day health centers, and housing programs. So, Laura, you can start.
Okay, good morning. And again, I'm going to be talking about this model called Share the Care that we have been using within a research program that we've had for the past 4 years at Jewish Home Life Care System. So Jewish Home Life Care System, again, does provide a continuum of services. We're often known for our three skilled nursing facilities, but we do have a very large community services division, both in Manhattan and the Bronx, as well as Westchester, which includes, as mentioned, housing, home care services, and medical and social adult day health center. I'm going to be focusing this morning on a research program that we have called Life Care Plus. Life Care Plus is a Medicare coordinated care demonstration project that we proposed the pilot to CMS in order to evaluate a variety of care coordination interventions so that we could measure the impact on reducing hospitalizations and really improve the healthcare outcomes for our clients. The clients within the Life Care Plus program are based both in Manhattan and the Bronx. Some of them are dually eligible and have both Medicare and Medicaid, but we really were focusing on those who only have Medicare services and therefore are not able in many cases to access some type of care coordination. I think anecdotally, many of us have seen that when we do provide coordination, that we see better outcomes, but we really wanted to have the research available. So actually, everyone who applied to the program was either put in a control group where they did not receive any further services from Jewish Home Life Care System, and then others were placed into a group that did receive the services. So we had six clinicians, and they were both nurses as well as social workers, providing care coordination to 330 frail elderly clients. And our goal, again, was really to try to keep clients out of the hospital and thereby reduce the cost to Medicare. Share the Care is an innovative model of care that we had found out about through presentations that can really assist clients and their primary caregivers to be able to widen the circle of informal supports that they depend on. Many of us, when we have clients admitted to our programs, we do get those emergency contacts who are, you know, put into the documentation to make sure that we're always able to access them. But in many cases, it's one to two names. And I don't think that we have the kind of involvement with them that we could and that would be able to provide better care for them. So Share the Care staff provided training to the Life Care Plus coordinators so that we would be able to adapt the program in order to fit the needs of our clients with their profile. So some of the challenges that we encountered as we were working with this was that the Share the Care model was really created in response to situations where younger people were being diagnosed with acute terminal illnesses. I think actually one of the authors of this, even unfortunately after she had written the book, herself became ill with cancer, but that was what sparked them towards beginning to create the model, was friends who became acutely ill and really needed to mobilize a support system to assist with many, you know, of the challenges of everyday living as well as those medical challenges that they faced at that point. So while certainly some of the clients that we are servicing do have acute illnesses or terminal ones, for the most part, our population is one of typical elderly Medicare recipients with long-term chronic care needs, and in many cases, limited family and social contacts. So again, with those younger people who the model was first identified for, you know, many of them had been working up until recently, so there were work colleagues to be able to access. There were people from groups and clubs that they had joined. And they had more family who were still alive and assisting them as opposed to what we see with many of our clients. So some of the adaptations that we needed to make included looking at the fact that, you know, caregivers for the elderly need to be available, you know, possibly less intensively, but over a much longer period of time. And I think this is a crucial piece. I know I recently went to a presentation where people were pointing out, you know, because oftentimes people say, well, how come, you know, grandma isn't taken care of the way it happened a generation or two ago? But the presenter, you know, pointed out, how old was grandma? Maybe she was, you know, she seemed very old, but truly at that time, maybe she was 67. Right? Maybe she had been sick for 1 to 2 years. And yes, there was intensive taking care of her, but much more today, the portrait of what we're seeing is somebody who they're 75 or they're 80, and they're actually going to be going through chronic illnesses for the next 10 or 15 years. So that really can create a very different picture of the type of burdens that a caregiver is dealing with. Because again, it's less intensive, but longer period. Again, our elderly clients usually having just a much smaller caregiving network, many of them not being involved in the types of activities that they previously were, so that they don't have the social supports. And in addition, the model of Share the Care was created, again, it was friends who were helping out friends to begin with, so that we really needed to look at how could we incorporate our professional staff, the Life Care Plus staff, to provide support and help the networks and, you know, facilitate getting the meeting going. But how would they play a role as a professional? Challenges that we encountered for the staff and this was a big one for us in the end, the Life Care Plus staff really needed to adjust their perspective from being the main support provider to being a facilitator. So they needed to make sure to facilitate that a caregiver group was going to come together to be able to take on some of the caregiving roles and responsibilities rather than being the one to do it. So a lot of times our care coordinators were the ones who were going and making those medical appointments for the clients, arranging, you know, possibly for an aide to take them to the visit, helping them to come up, you know, with questions for the physician. So, and in this case, they were delegating some those roles. So that was a transition. Another piece that was a challenge was identifying a more broad support network for some of the clients. Many of them started off by saying, well, I gave you my emergency contact, and that's the only person available to me, and that's it. So that we really had to work further with them. And again, looking at the fact that in many cases they felt they didn't want to impose or to obligate neighbors, friends, or others who they might not have had such a reciprocal relationship with more recently. And I would say within this also, they really were looking to at, you know, to what extent were they compromising their privacy by allowing others to be caregivers for them. So the status of the Life Care Plus program has had a big impact on the way that Share the Care ended up being rolled out. So Life Care Plus was a part of a group of providers who were participating in this pilot research project for CMS. And despite a lot of advocacy, because we always knew, that, as I mentioned, the program has been in existence, Life Care Plus, for about 4 years. We always knew there was supposed to be an end date of 2008, but truly up until this past December, it was hoped that CMS would see how helpful it was to have providers who were ready and willing to carry through on these pilot programs and would renew the funding so that our program, as well as a number of others across the country, would continue to function. Unfortunately, it was not renewed, so we are, the Life Care Plus program will be closing its doors in May. Share the Care, we began to roll it out just since last spring, and I think what happened is that over the course of the year, as staff were seeing whether we would be going forward or not beyond May, we did have quite a few staff who left or did decide to transition into other positions within other programs as it began to look like the program wasn't going to continue. So I think that really had a big impact on our ability to get more caregiver groups going. I'm going to talk more right now about the model itself. As I mentioned before, all the Life Care Plus clients are, many of them are frail. All of them are living at home. And one of the criteria for participating in the program was having chronic illnesses. So in some cases, we were dealing with clients who had an acute episode, but not all the time. You know, in many situations, there was a chronic diagnosis that they had. So what we did is we asked all of the staff to review their client lists and select people who could be at risk for a major acute episode, those who may need significant care coordination so that it would really be helpful to mobilize some of the abilities of their caregivers, and those who would most benefit from assistance in organizing a network. We then assisted the staff to really put the model into place. So we talked to them about, you know, how they would go about introducing the program, which really involved discussing potential care needs with the client. And I can't emphasize enough how much I really believe that one of the main benefits of this program was the fact that it sparked those long-term planning conversations, which so often don't happen until a crisis arises. You know, it really made it so that we were beginning to talk about those difficult challenges of, okay, you know, this may be worst case scenario, but it might happen, and how would we deal with it? The next step was to assist the clients in identifying the possible caregivers who would participate. And as I mentioned, it was a challenge. It really involved asking them to expand that list of the emergency contacts and to really say to them, okay, we know that, you know, the daughter who's here in this city is going to be available, but what about the son who's in California or the niece who's in Chicago? You know, how could they be of assistance? We also, again, asked them to look at neighbors, you know, current neighbors as well as somebody who might have lived close to them in the past but may still be in contact, as well as, and again, we're dealing with an urban population, so we have building staff available, but again, neighbors who might not be so close but might be somebody who'd be willing to keep a key, for example. We talked to staff about using a variety of sources in order to access caregivers, going through address books, looking at holiday card lists, any other lists of contacts they might have. In some instances, especially those who are more limited in their mobility, they might not be attending a church or synagogue at this point, but there might be contacts, both the priest, minister, or rabbi. But in addition, a lot of churches, for example, have groups that specifically will go and visit those members who aren't well and aren't able to get out, so that we could include them as well. People from, you know, that clients know from senior centers, community centers, even if they're not currently going, you know, if they went, you know, a year ago, they might have friends from there, any volunteer groups, political organizations. Within the group of support, we also included those who assist people for private pay, so a trusted housekeeper or a private pay aide, who would be part of, you know, that caregiving group. In addition, as I mentioned, long-distance people, and a lot of times we hear, well, what can they do? You know, they're not here. They're not going to be coming and going to a medical appointment, for example, but they really can participate. One of the examples they have in the Share the Care literature is about the one person, with somebody who was sick in New York City, the one person in New Jersey who said, I'm never going to be able to come out to visit, but just whenever medical bills come, I'll take care of them. And they said it was such an invaluable resource for the other people who are helping to be able to just gather up all those bills, put them in a big envelope, and mail them out and know that they were going to be dealt with, because that in and of itself is a big job. Someone who's willing to do research on the Internet. So, again, they might not in person be so available, but they can do the research. They can make the phone calls to advocate or even just to socialize. You know, again, someone who can call on agree to call on a weekly basis or every other day. Other people that clients can involve include union or retired, you know, people they knew from professional groups. And again, these discussions can be interesting in terms of finding out who are important people in their lives. You know, somebody who they might not have spoken to you about, but actually really is still involved with them. Organizing a meeting is the next step. And so the client or the life care staff member, we left it up to the client as to how they wanted to do that, would then contact the people on the list and inform them of the need for a group that the client can rely on as needed. And this piece was important, how it's introduced to people. So we talked about setting up a meeting in the client's home, which would include the contacts who expressed interest, as well as the client themselves and the life care staff person. But it was clearly communicated that people joining the group are volunteering to do exactly as much as they're willing and able to do, and that there will be a lot of opportunity to talk about what they can and cannot do. Because I think, you know, again, that's the piece. It's very important. The client doesn't want to impose so much. And frankly, as all of us know, we are all so busy that that we want to make sure that if we're stepping into something like this, that we're able to set realistic boundaries in terms of what's possible. The other piece that's important to keep in mind is that family members and the people who've already been identified as primary caregivers do need assurance that they're not being replaced, just helped. A lot of times we think, oh, here we are being, you know, providing to them further assistance, so they're just going to be so grateful. And really, sometimes the feedback we get is, oh, I don't really need all this help. And there's just some concern about, you know, it might be that their identity is very much tied up with the fact that they're the caregiver. So they want to make sure that role isn't usurped in some way. In terms of the content of the meeting, actually Share the Care has a lot of excellent exercises as well as forms. And again, at the end of this, I will share with you their website. There's also a book as well as a DVD about the model. But LifeCare Plus staff followed the format in the literature in terms of educating the group about many different categories of caregiving needs that might come up. For the most part, we did not use, although I love the exercises that they have in the book, we didn't use them because some of them are more along a psychotherapeutic model, and we really were focusing on educating the caregivers as well as getting down to the concrete tasks of you know, identifying areas of expertise of people as well as tests that they are not willing or not able to do. So some of the categories of need that we talked about in terms of healthcare included scheduling medical appointments, asking, you know, for some people it's an invaluable thing for them to have someone accompany them to a physician and help them to ask questions of that authoritative figure. In some instances, you know, we needed, and possibly we had one person who was helping with medication management but wanted to have a backup, for example, in case that person was not available for any reason. Healthcare proxies were discussed, which, again, it's something that we should be doing, and we are, with all of our clients, but really making sure that it happens, that they do appoint someone, as well as insurance assistance. Errands, and this could be just, you know, along the lines of library visits. You know, somebody doesn't think of, oh, I go to the library weekly anyways. You know, I could also be picking up something for the neighbor down the hall, for example, or while doing food shopping, picking up some extra groceries for the person when they're, you know, on the day that their private pay aid, for example, is not available. We talked about financial assistance, and I know in our home care program, so many times we've encountered situations which becomes a crisis. Someone was helping with the money management, and all of a sudden that person isn't available, and no backup was ever chosen. Another crisis, and again, I feel like we see these, we know that they are possible, and yet sometimes we're not taking the time to make the plans ahead of time. But when somebody's hospitalized, who's going to be doing pet care? If there are pets or plant care, and even though these seem like simple things, they do get lost in the shuffle unless some type of planning is done ahead of time. In addition, just talking about who are those emergency people going to be? the neighbor who might be able to not do anything else to help, but is a trusted person who'd be able to have an extra key. Or the person who, since the daughter lives, you know, an hour's drive away, the person who would be able to be called at 10 o'clock at night to assist someone to go to the emergency room is really important as well. So while some of the needs are addressed right away, we actually tried to make it that these meetings were really for the purposes of education and future planning, and that the role of our professional staff was really to assist the client to have the group and be able to access it as needed so that we could facilitate when in the future they might need assistance. So in some cases at the meeting, again, there were people who were identified. Yes, you know, there was someone who was able to do a little food shopping on a regular basis starting right now. But in other instances, it just was that, you know, in a vague, broad way, people said, yes, you know, if there was a hospitalization, I'd be available. Or in the future, when there's more of a need, I could be someone who would be able to be called on. But the important piece here is that no one person is being unduly burdened, which is, I think, what happens way too often in the system that we have set up now. And it becomes very difficult sometimes, as we see so often with caregivers. So the benefits to the client are multiple. Initiating the service provides, again, as I mentioned, the opportunity to really have those long-term planning discussions, which all too often don't happen, and to really allow as well the client to talk about what do they see as their possible future options. And this can be surprising because sometimes I think, you know, I certainly know that I have heard families say, well, they know there's never going to be nursing home placement in the future, or, you know, never this or never that. But there's not been an open discussion really that's occurred with the client to find out what do they see. Maybe they're a bit more realistic than their family is about what the options are that are going to be possible. And again, it also helps to identify current and future unmet caregiving needs. So again, the person who doesn't have those people to assist if there was an emergency hospitalization, to know that she had the person to call at the last minute. But it really allows the client to have the security of knowing that there's a group of social supports. And the way we adapted the system, since we did have the professional, to have as well that person who they could access in order to mobilize the group. So the first meeting really is a very powerful message of support for the client. I know one meeting that I attended, and this was with a younger man who had some psychiatric illnesses as well as medical and financial problems at the time. So he was not a very willing participant, actually, at that first meeting. And yet it was so clear to me as I was there that it was tremendous for him to just see that so many that people were coming together to give attention to him and to his problems. Even though, you know, it was a short meeting, just an hour, to discuss these things, that in and of itself was really important. It also allows clients to have a structure for receiving help instead of having the burden of having to ask for help and share the care. Again, in their literature and the training they did with us, emphasized this numerous times, and it's really true. Even with someone who's having an acute episode where they really do need a lot of care, and people try to come forward, you know, oftentimes people come forward and say, well, call me if you ever need any help. That's difficult to do. A lot of times to make that phone call and to impose, so that if we have the structure ahead of time where there's a plan and we know, we can call this person because they've already said that they're someone who can do that extra shopping trip a few times a week. That's very helpful. And again, it also allows the caregivers to be able to have a structure to provide caregiving while still being able to set limits as needed, which is crucial. And again, I participated in another group, and this was with somebody who was a younger person dealing with a family member's acute illness. I know my first reaction as somebody tried to organize help was, oh, I'll help cook dinners all the time. And actually, it was the person who was organizing it who said, you know, you're already overextended, and maybe you're going to be the person who makes sure that, you know, the other children in the family get taken to school when they miss the bus. Which was perfect. I was able, and that was invaluable. I was able to be the backup. My friend didn't have to come to me every single time that happened to say, oh, do you mind? Is this possible? Because it was already planned for and structured, but it was something that I was able to do. In addition, this really allows our agencies to be able to spread our resources further because we're able to access those support systems. I think that sometimes we feel that, you know, we're going to do our best and try to provide as much assistance and support in every way, and we can't. This was brought very powerfully to me, and I think to many of us, as we've dealt with various crises. So I know that when we had, in New York City, we had the blackout, suddenly we realized, no, it wasn't going to be that every home health aide was getting out to our clients' homes or that every nurse was going to be able to see everyone. And we really needed to mobilize those caregivers in that situation. Some of the case examples that I have of cases that we've dealt with LifeCare Plus, a client agreed with the idea of having a share the care group. And actually, this worked out very nicely because she did have some social support system already in place. But she was very concerned about that fact of obligating others or imposing on them in some way. So the piece that she added, which I think was really wonderful, is that others who participated in the meeting would also be looking at possibly forming share the care groups for themselves. So we did do a meeting, and the social worker provided education as to possible scenarios and how to meet them. And again, this involved, when we talk about possible scenarios, you know, it included talking about, okay, there's this illness, and we know that this is the progression so that this might be, you know, what we're looking at in the future, and how are we going to meet, take care of those needs. Healthcare proxies actually were done. And again, I think it was this client along with her sister-in-law and sister and then another elderly couple who participated in the meeting. And I think all of them ended up doing healthcare proxies during the meeting as well as filling out some of the forms to make use of them. So we ended up not just doing it with our own LifeCare Plus client, but also with some of her other people in her life, which was really nice. Another example that we had was a client with numerous health issues who needed to have supports in place. And again, there was a support system, but not one that was truly mobilized to be of assistance. And we did have some resistance, as mentioned, but we are holding a meeting very soon before the program closes because actually this type of model is, you know, even more so now as we are trying to discharge our clients and referring them to other resources. Sometimes there's not a lot of resources out there so that it, again, it's even more crucial in some cases for us to mobilize these caregiver support systems. We had an elderly couple with one adult daughter and they, again, really were a little resistant to including others, mainly because of privacy issues. But it was a well-off couple who had, we discovered, never included their daughter in any sort of financial planning whatsoever. So this helped for them to begin to have those conversations just within their family. But it also helped because the husband was hard of hearing. The wife was very, very sick. And he was unable to make the phone calls needed when there was an emergency. So that they actually were able to begin to involve building staff as well as neighbors to be available to him if a situation came up and he wasn't able to get the help that he otherwise would have needed. There's many different agency approaches that can be taken in terms of implementing Share the Care. It could be that the agency would decide to just do it with some of the acute care cases. And the benefit of doing that is there's a real visible need to everyone. It's not just a, well, whenever we get around to holding a meeting, you know, this might be helpful, but there's actually, here's the diagnosis, here's what's going on, and there's these unmet needs that we need to deal with. When we began it, we really were looking to try to do groups with all of our clients. Again, we piloted it just within one program within our system, and started by asking the staff to just identify five of their clients to begin with, but we really were hoping that in the end, all of our clients could have some sort of group, possibly, even if it only involved, you know, three or four people who could be involved with them, because we saw it, again, as another tool to really be able to begin the difficult process of planning for the future of our clients, as well as providing new ways to provide support to our caregivers. Share the Care, as I mentioned, is a book. The full name is Share the Care, How to Organize a Group to Care for Someone Who is Seriously Ill. And Sheila Warnock is the full-time staff member now of the organization, and she's actually available. She's in New York City. Her office is in Manhattan, but she is available to provide staff trainings and is very good. They did a full-day training for us, which I think actually was a bit much for professional staff because we know a lot of the information that they're giving, but a half-day piece would be very helpful, I think. And as I mentioned, they have a website, sharethecare.org, as well as a DVD. On the website, they actually have some great forms. Some of the forms of which, especially like for a home care agency, are things that we don't need ourselves, you know, lists of medications or, you know, forms to show what the medical history is. But they have, for example, just a sample shopping list, you know, where somebody could put off check marks, or a home safety chart that looks at, you know, for example, lighting, wiring, smoke alarms, unstable furniture or, you know, carpeting that needs to be you know, dealt with. So it's definitely very much worthwhile looking at the website. In addition, I provided to you a couple of handouts that we developed ourselves. One was a model to integrate Share the Care, and Life Care Plus is the title. And we gave this to the staff when they first were beginning. Again, they got the training, but we wanted them to be able to have something that they could carry with them and look at as they were going through the different steps. And to remind them, too, for example, you know, under Roman numeral 2, assisting the clients to identify their networks, because it can be a little daunting when someone says to you, no, there's just this one person, that's it. You know, so just kind of a reminder to the staff, okay, start to ask them to get out that address book. You know, start to ask about the church or synagogue that they went to before, et cetera. And so this was kind of helpful crib notes for them. And then finally, and this was, again, as we were meeting a little bit of resistance and finding that we weren't getting the numbers that we wanted, we developed the last handout, which is the questionnaire to assess clients for the share the care model. Just, again, a list of 10 questions, which actually is invaluable to go over with all of the patients that we're dealing with. But really is a way of being able to ask them, okay, how would you answer these questions? And don't you think that maybe we need to resolve this a little bit better and get some of these needs met, since it seems like they're not being met appropriately right now? So, again, the staff, they definitely did identify some clients who were appropriate and who really benefited. In many situations, because for, as I mentioned, with Share the Care, the way the model is done with the acute clients that they're dealing with, they, you know, they had the one meeting and then a group was full force, you know, put into play right away. For us, again, it's more, oftentimes it was more of an education piece to begin with, as well as some identification of current tasks, but very much the professional staff member was going to be involved in order to be able to mobilize people for the future. So I'm going to open it up right now for a question and answer session.
Thank you, Laura, for a wonderful presentation. And Javon, would you open the lines for questions?
Thank you. If you have a question at this time, please press the 1 key on your touchtone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key.
Laura, this is Sarah, and many of your comments just hit home. I think even as healthcare workers, we don't often think or ask or feel comfortable with, you know, reaching out and asking for help when we need it. So I was wondering, what was the staff's response to this model when you first rolled it out to them, the concept?
Right. I think we made one major mistake, when we first rolled it out, and I would say that was having it be a full-day staff training. Which is why I would really recommend doing it in a shorter model, because they did feel like we were preaching to the choir. You know, a lot of the things, you know, that we were telling them to do were tasks or ideas that they already were very familiar with, so that we needed to make it a shorter, simpler process in terms of that piece. In addition, as I mentioned, this was more having them be facilitators rather than being the main person who was going to be providing the care. So that's a little bit of a different role. And for some of them, they took to that right away because I think they already see that's a crucial piece. And for others, we definitely had to push a bit more and, you know, keep getting back to them of, okay, you know, we're waiting on your list of 5 people and need to get it this week, you know, in order to go forward.
It just makes so much sense with the limited resources that healthcare has and all of the chronic, you know, frail elderly patients that are out there. I think it just makes so much sense.
Yeah, I know. And as I mentioned, the other piece, and I, this was that whole lesson of what happens, even when we had the transit strike here and suddenly realized that, you know, it was going to be the caregivers. It wasn't us who were going to be able to really provide all of the help. We could, you know, we tried to do as much as we could, and I think, you know, what we did went well, but it really involved making sure that others came forward, and I think that it's crucial that we make sure that that's happening in general.
Javana, are there any questions in the queue?
Yes, we have a question on the line from Marianne Gould from Lifetime Care.
Laura,
yeah.
What kind of outcomes overall did you have from this program?
Outcomes in terms of hospitalization.
The reason that you put the program together, did you find decreased hospitalizations, more, obviously, a greater support system for clients? But overall, were you able to track outcomes at all?
Unfortunately, and again, I think this was because, you know, even as we were rolling out the program, we were, you know, within LifeCare Plus, we were realizing that LifeCare Plus's days may be numbered, and we're losing staff at that point. We weren't able to get enough going so that I would be able to give outcome tracking beyond the case examples of situations that we saw. For those that we did have the meet, even just to have the meeting for, we definitely saw, and I don't have statistics, but we definitely saw that more long-term planning was done, more identification of caregiving needs that they were going to be encountering happened, and we definitely saw that there was, you know, we got more healthcare proxies at that point. We had more, you know, situations where people identified, you know, what they were going to do as an illness progressed. For example, dementia, you know, situation progressed, what would happen. But unfortunately, we don't, from our performance improvement here, we don't have the statistics on the outcome specifically.
Well, thank you very much.
Again, if anyone has a question, please press the 1 key.
I think for just as an observation, Laura, that when you implemented the Share to Care program, there's when patients do or when people come home from the hospital, they often aren't aware of their limitations and very often have questions on how I'm going to be able to do this and how I'm going to be able to do that. And in some ways, they're uncomfortable even accessing family members. So it's really nice to be able to offer them a type of facilitator to assist them in accessing this type of informal support network.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and I would say also, and again, this is where that identity piece played in terms of the staff, because the staff actually really saw themselves as the one who would jump in when someone came back from the hospital. But actually, as we've pointed out to them, you know, the fact that the program is ending now really very much shows that they're not always going to be there. And yet the daughter or the good friend, you know, may be in the future. And so that it's even more important to roll this out. And we are looking now. We do have long-term home health care programs, and we are looking at the possibility of implementing the model within those home care programs at this time.
Yes, I can see where it may be labor-intensive, but in actuality, once it's put in place, it really helps out tremendously on long-term.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Initially, as we found, that initially if you give a lot of care at the beginning, very often the long-term care plan will become easier as the time goes.
Right. No, that's very true. Yeah.
Yeah. Are there any other questions, Siobhan?
I'm showing no further questions.
Okay. Well, then I'd like to thank you, Laura, for giving a wonderful presentation. I think it was really helpful, and to at least introduce this model for agencies to consider to implement within their agency. I want to remind everybody of the evaluation that was sent. We do look at them and read them and try to improve our teleconferences based on those evaluations. Our next teleconference or shared learning session will be April 9th at 9 a.m., 9 to 10, and I wish everyone have a nice day. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for participating in today's conference. This concludes the program. You may all disconnect. Everyone have a great day.